Too much? He laughs lightly, searching my face.
No, I say, and pause before adding, I'm just taking it all in. Taking him in, wondering if I know him at all.
I realize it's probably too soon when we've just said the L word, but it's different with you.
Wow, I'm flattered.
Flattered? He asks, and I cringe.
Sorry, I didn't mean flattered. I don't know. I'm a little caught off guard is all. Nick stares at me, almost as if he's looking through me. And I feel pressure to say something to take the weight of his gaze off me. I love you, I say, but my stomach knots at the words. They feel wrong, like they're the last thing I should be saying right now.
But that's not the same thing, is it?
He asks, sounding hurt.
Do you believe you're my soulmate?
His phrasing of the question throws me off. Am I understanding him right, that he isn't asking if he's mine, just if I think I'm his? Dylan's purse and ID are practically screaming at me from the back seat, and I know I can't ignore them for much longer. Hiding the truth no longer seems like a viable option. Could Nick have lied to me about how he came to have her purse, but be telling the truth about thinking I'm his soulmate? Were things with me really different than they had been with Dylan? I'm going to ask him about the purse as soon as we get to the hotel. Until then, my instincts tell me to be agreeable. I do. I do think we're soulmates, I say.
Do you think you're mine?
Yes, that's exactly what I just said.
Not exactly, he says.
Why is this so important to him? Before I can respond, he continues.
Because the thing is, Jax, for this to really work between us, we need to be on the same page.
We are on the same page. I love you. I feel squeamish after I say those words. There's something off-putting about his tone, his demeanor, his needing me to say this a certain way.
But do you love me more than you've loved anyone else?
His question feels like a punch in the stomach, because I know he's asking about James. You're two different people. I can't compare you, I manage. The hotel is off of Newport Coast Drive, right? I ask, judging the distance to it in my mind. My heart thuds in my chest as I calculate. It's still several minutes away. I know I need to ask him, but I'm so scared. Maybe I should turn the car around, drive to Beth's, have her there when I question him.
Yes, he says. And you're probably going to need your sweatshirt. It will be chilly once we get outside.
Nick reaches into the back seat to grab the shirt. Wait, I say, but he's already unbuckling his seatbelt.
What the?
He doesn't finish. But he doesn't have to. His face freezes as he sees the purse.
What are you doing with this? This doesn't belong to you. You went through my things?
He raises his voice.
Is that why you were in my place?
Nick, you don't trust me, he asks, like it's the most inconceivable thing in the world. As I look into his eyes, my first instinct is to say that I do, because he's been there for me through the worst time of my life. I've confided in him. He's listened. But the purse... The purse doesn't make sense. I don't know what to say.
You know, I love you more than I loved Dylan. But you obviously don't love me more than you loved James, he says, and I feel myself getting defensive.
My love for James isn't in the past tense. I'm not sure it ever will be, or if I ever want it to be. That love is deep, with roots. It is complicated and quirky, and now he's gone. But it's still ours, and that can't be measured. But before I can respond, Nick dives in again.
He cheated on you. I would never do that to you. But yet it's my home you snoop through, Nick says.
And when he puts it this way, it does seem wrong. Nick, I was going to tell you, because obviously we need to talk about what I found and why you have it. Nick turns away, and his shoulders start shaking. Nick? I say his name a few times, but he doesn't respond. Finally, he turns, and there are tears streaming down his face. There's something about his overwhelming emotion right now that warns me not to reach out to him, like he's deliberately creating a wall between us with his tears. I thought you understood me, because you'd been through the same thing. It's like you don't care about me the way you should, and neither did Dylan. And I hate it when I give, 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 and get nothing in return. When I lose. What do you mean? I ask, a slow chill traveling up my spine. The red flags are becoming impossible to ignore. My gut tells me I already know the answers to my questions about the purse, the driver's license, the stalking. The realization runs its way through me, quick and sharp. She gave herself to him, but she belonged to me. Nick turns toward the window again. There's something about that word that pushes me to confront him. Nick, were you engaged to Dylan when she died? He jerks his head around and stares at me. I grip the steering wheel tighter, bracing myself for his answer. Yes, I was, he says slowly, and I let out a long breath. So maybe there is an explanation for the rest of it. After a beat, he says quietly, in my heart, I was. My stomach drops. What do you mean, in your heart? You either were or you weren't. He doesn't directly answer me. Instead, he starts telling me about how she used Vaseline to get the ring off, that she told him it had never fit quite right. I told her we could have it resized, or I could get her a different one, but she didn't seem to hear me. She just told me she had to go. He rubs his hands on his jeans, lost in thought for a moment. Nick, did she break up with you? I ask again, my frustration mounting. She said that's what she wanted, but she didn't have a reason. I knew she just needed time to think, that she'd be back. Did she come back? Change her mind? I press, sitting up taller in my seat. I was working on that, he says, then shakes his head. What do you mean? I needed to know how she was spending her time without me. I figured it wouldn't take long for her to figure out she was making a mistake. So I followed her. He chews on his lower lip. I never expected to see her cheating on me with him. But was she cheating if... He cuts me off and launches into a story. He tells me how one night she headed north toward Los Angeles. She took a downtown exit he didn't recognize. His heart was hammering so hard and his hands were getting numb. He thought he might be having a panic attack. Then he pulled his bike to a stop and watched her pull up to a hotel. That's when I saw him for the first time. He grits his teeth. Your husband. He leaned down and kissed her. And she held him there against her mouth for so long. They were in front of people. In front of me. I almost rushed James right then. I wanted to beat the shit out of him. But I couldn't move. I try to push the image out of my mind that he's created, but I can't. I see James's eyes light up, him scooping Dylan up in his arms, covering her mouth with his. Where had I been that night? At home, folding his underwear? I couldn't stop imagining them up in a hotel room doing God knows what. He stops, balling his hands into fists at his sides. I didn't sleep at all. I went to the gas station and got coffee to stay awake. And finally, early the next morning, I saw your husband come out, and I followed him. I can't bring myself to stop him, because he's filling in the blanks. blanks that I haven't realized have been there for far too long. He tells me James led him to our house. A few Google searches later, he had answers. His name was James Morales, and he was married to a woman named Jax. Me.
I followed you. I watched you at Trader Joe's as you loaded up your cart with frozen orange chicken and spring rolls. As you debated between the low-fat and the 2% milk. That was cute.
He laughs.
As you tried to fit everything in that clown car of yours.
Goosebumps prick my arms as the real Nick becomes clearer to me. He stalked Dylan, then James, then me.
Nick describes trailing me through the aisles of the grocery store, then out into the parking lot as I struggled to shove my bags into the tiny trunk of my Mini Cooper that James always chided me for buying because it wasn't practical.
Then to my home. Is that why Nick had seemed familiar when I first met him? Because I subconsciously remembered seeing him? Rage burns inside of me as the weight of what Nick is saying hits me. He took advantage of me.
I followed you for weeks. I realized we were kindred spirits, you and me. Even though we never spoke, I felt a connection. Because of what we'd both been through.
I pound the steering wheel with my fist and accidentally hit the horn.
You lied to me, I burst out.
Nick doesn't react.
I never lied to you.
Yes, you did. What about when you came to my house? You acted like that was the first time you had seen me.
I never said that. I never told you I'd never seen you before.
He was right. He hadn't. I realize I'm speeding and ease my foot off the gas pedal slightly.
But you just said you'd followed me for weeks. Why didn't you mention that?
Jax, don't you understand? I came to your door to help you. And that's what I told you I was doing?
To help me? Is that what you call it?
My voice is shaking.
Yes, absolutely. I had information, right? Like when I figured out Dylan's email password and printed out all her emails to James and showed them to you. It was so you could see what was going on between them. So you could see what he'd done to you.
I think back to how much it hurt to read them. Had he really been trying to help me by making me read their loving thoughts to one another?
Nick, you misled me. You said she was your fiancé. She was my fiancé.
He lets out an exasperated sigh.
I didn't agree to the breakup.
I pound the steering wheel again. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
How could you do this, Nick? How could you misrepresent everything? And how could I be so stupid?
Calm down, Jax. I never lied to you. I told you I loved her, and I did. My head is spinning. I try to calm my breathing, but it's hopeless. I'm panting like a dog.
Going to Maui together was to help us get over them. That wasn't a lie either. And it did help. You even said so yourself.
I think about the time we spent asking questions Nick already knew the answers to.
But you weren't honest. You'd already been there.
That's true. But I never told you I hadn't been.
He folds his arms across his chest.
I went because I needed to know.
Know what? I whisper fearfully.
Why she'd chosen James over me. Why he'd won.
Won? My God, he's delusional.
I cover my mouth with my hand.
I followed them to Maui, yes. And then I watched them on their excursions. They were so giddy. And I just kept getting more and more angry. Thinking about you, at home, so oblivious.
That word is like a slap across the face. Because I was. Blind to it all, pushing my stupid cart through Trader Joe's, trying to pick the perfect fucking milk, thinking my husband was where he said he was, having no clue he was swimming with sea turtles, with his lover, being trailed by some... And then they decided to drive the road to Hana. I saw them kissing by some store. Dylan was wearing this little dress, one I'd never seen before, that she'd clearly bought for him.
"Stop it! Stop it right now!" I yell.
"No, you need to listen to me."
He holds up the purse.
"I'm going to explain."
But I don't want to listen. I don't want to know. I just need out of this car. I picture Dylan and James having their picnic, saying what would be some of their final words. Had James whispered that he loved her? Told her how happy he was that he'd now have that family he'd always wanted? Or had my shadow been in the back of James's mind, our tattered love still a placeholder in his chest?
"Once I was in Maui with you, it all made sense. Why they had the accident."
"Accident?" I shake my head, tears rolling down my cheeks.
"The brakes giving out right when they did, at the cliff where there were no guardrails, where so many other accidents have happened. That was fate.
When I pricked a tiny hole in the brake line, I had no way of knowing when or if James would lose control of that Jeep. That was between him and God. Everything happened the way it did because you were meant to be with me." I see James's smile, his bedhead, his lanky body, his sea glass eyes. I glance at Nick's profile. He really doesn't think he's responsible for killing them. One man dead, another responsible. I gave my heart to both of them. A wave of nausea cascades through me, and I swallow the bile in my throat.
"What about the pregnancy test?" I whisper. "What did you think when you found that in her purse? Because you didn't already know, did you?"
He shakes his head.
"That was a surprise. But they'd made a fool of you, of both of us," he says. "It worked out as it should. Those two didn't deserve to bring a baby into this world."
"Nick, you can't mean that." I stare at him in disbelief. How could someone do something so horrific and not see it? How could I have loved a man like that? His arms go rigid. His jaw tightens.
"I love you, Jax. Don't you get it?"
The sob I'd been holding in finally escapes my throat.
"Why aren't you upset about what you did to them?" "What I did?"
He's yelling now.
"The brake line didn't prick itself. You killed them!" I scream, my voice shaking with emotion.
He shakes his head.
"That's on him."
"No!" I yell the word so loudly, I don't recognize the sound of my own voice. I yell at him for taking James. For Dylan. For that baby.
"No, no, no, you killed them. Oh my God, how did I ever love you?"
I'm sobbing so hard I can barely see the road. Fear and anger are swirling together inside me, and I'm not sure which feeling is more powerful.
"How can you say that?"
He slams his hands on the dashboard. Dylan's purse falls off of his lap onto the floor. A sign that I need to get out of this car, now. He looks at me, a rage in his eyes I have never seen before. I let out a startled yelp when he punches the radio, his knuckles covered in blood when he draws them back. I wipe my tears. We're on a high stretch of highway that overlooks the beach, which is several hundred feet below. If I stop now, I'll need to outrun him while dodging the traffic on the curvy road. I know I won't get far. Suddenly he lunges for the steering wheel, and I turn it sharply, narrowly avoiding an oncoming car.
"What are you doing?" I scream. "Why couldn't you just love me? Why doesn't anyone love me the way they're supposed to?"
He gives me a long look that I can't read, then grabs the wheel before I can stop him.
He yanks it, and I fight to regain control, but he's too strong. I scream as we slew off the road, the car smashing through the guardrail and sailing toward the sharp rocks that separate the canyon from the ocean. In the next strange moment of sudden silence, I think about James. The day he proposed. The goofy grin on his face as he waited for me to answer. I picture my sister. The tears glistening in her eyes when I held up my college diploma. I see my parents on my wedding day, smiling widely through their apprehension, their love for me stronger than their fear I might be making a mistake. I listen to Nick's screams bleeding into my own and realize that no one will ever know the truth. That he killed James and Dylan. That we are both going to die with his secrets and his lies.
Chapter 42. Jax. After. The first thing I hear is an incessant beeping sound. Ding, ding, ding. Where am I? Ding, ding, ding. My foggy mind tries to take inventory of my body. There is pain. So much of it. Everywhere. In my legs, my arms, my chest, especially in my head. I try to open my eyes, but they won't cooperate.
Her eyelids just fluttered. Call the nurse!
I hear my mom's voice, more high-pitched than normal, and feel someone squeeze my fingers.
Jax, can you hear me?
Yes, I want to say. I can hear you, Mom. But my mouth won't open. I want to tell her I can hear the tears in her throat. She's been crying.
Where am I?
Doctor, she's trying to say something. It's my sister's shaking voice now, and the urgency in it gives me the push I need to force my eyes open. Beth is by my side, dark shadows under her eyes. My mom's are swollen and puffy. Dad's are filled with relief. He smiles at me. I look around, my pulse quickening. I see monitors. An IV drip attached to my arm, a thin hospital gown covering me, a cast on one leg, a scratchy sheet rubbing the other. I try to move, but the pain is too severe. I try to talk, but no words will come. A man with thinning gray hair rushes in.
I'm Dr. Turner.
A nurse follows him, and he says something about checking my vitals. They start to examine me, flashing lights in my eyes, checking my pulse, looking inside my mouth. They ask me questions that I struggle to answer, not because I don't know what my name is or what year it is, but because my mouth is so dry. The nurse hands me a cup of water and tells me to sip it slowly. Finally, Dr. Turner pulls up a stool, gives me a sympathetic smile, and asks me what I remember. I can feel a memory sitting in the periphery of my mind, waiting for me to grab it. I think hard, force myself to recall what happened, what brought me here. I close my eyes, and it comes to me like an electric shock. Nick. The lack of remorse. The refusal to accept what he'd done. His ambivalence. My rage. His rage. The fight for the steering wheel. I start to say accident, but stop to correct it to crash. Because it wasn't an accident at all. Just like James's wasn't. Tears stream down my cheeks at the horror of what's happened. The memory of Nick's words. His justifications hitting me all over again. I fell in love with the man who killed my husband. James. He's gone. Oh, my God. It feels like the wound has been torn open all over again. As if he's been ripped from me all over again. Beth rushes over and wipes my tears, having no idea how much pain I'm actually in. What's really happened? Dr. Turner continues. You're at Hoag Hospital in Newport Beach. You have several lacerations from the impact, he says, giving me a moment. I reach up and feel a bandage around my head. We had to put 11 stitches in your scalp and 3 over your right eye, so you probably have a pretty nasty headache. The nurse comes over and adjusts my IV. You've been unconscious for almost 24 hours.
Almost a full day? It feels like I was in the car just moments ago. I can still hear his voice.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being unbearable, how much pain are you in?
Emotionally or physically? 5, I finally say, choosing the first number that comes to my mind. How could I explain that the pain in my heart is far worse than the one in my body? I'd give that pain a 15.
Janet just gave you a dose of Percocet, he said, nodding at the nurse. So you should feel relief very soon.
Will I?
You also broke your leg, the doctor continues, in 2 places. He taps the cast just below my knee and also by my shin.
You're lucky to be alive, Beth says, squeezing my hand. Thank God, my mom sobs. First James and his terrible accident, and then you. When I got the call, I was outside of my own body, thinking I could not lose you, my baby. Thank God, thank God.
My mom presses her face into my chest, and I wince from the pain, but don't let her know how much it hurts. The police ask to be called when you're feeling up to it. They have a few questions for you, the doctor says. I feel the rush of the car swerving out of its lane, my head slamming against the window.
The police.
The last time I talked to 2 officers, they told me my husband was never coming home because he'd died in a car crash. And now they wanted to talk to me about my car crash. But there was so much more to tell them. The ID, the purse, Nick.
How is Nick?
I find my sister's eyes. And they tell me the answer I both feared and hoped for. Beth and my parents exchange a look, and the doctor and nurse silently leave the room. Beth is still holding my hand, gripping it harder as she talks.
He was ejected from the car. He didn't make it, she says softly. Nick is dead? I ask, needing to hear it again, to be sure.
Yes. I'm so sorry, Beth says, not realizing my tears are flowing faster and harder, not because I'm sad, but because I'm relieved. Chapter 43 Jax After A month later, the sound of Nick's screams as we flew over the cliff aren't quite as deafening. I don't see the flash of the guardrail every time I close my eyes. I don't remember my head hitting the driver's side window each night when I lay it on my pillow. The memories of the crash have subsided, slightly. But the vivid details of Nick's words, those memories, they could live with me forever. Beth was horrified when I told her the story in the hospital, then enraged. She said she would have killed him if he hadn't already been dead.
You knew something wasn't right with him. You tried to tell me, I said to her.
I was being protective, but I had no idea what he was capable of. My God, no one could have known that. Then I told her what I couldn't reconcile, no matter how many times the thought passed through my mind.
He said that he did it for me, that he killed them for me, I said. How am I supposed to live with that? I whispered.
I don't know. Beth said. I wish I did, but I don't. But I will be here for you as we figure it out.
Why couldn't I see it?
I blinked through my tears.
Am I that much of an idiot?
No, you were mourning James,
who is dead because of Nick. I wish I had made different choices. If I hadn't ruined things with James, he would still be here.
Jax, she trailed off. The skin between her eyes gathering as she thought. At some point, you're going to have to let yourself off the hook.
I can't do that, I said.
James is dead because of me.
I could never pretend to understand what you're going through, but I can tell you this. It is not your fault. And hopefully after some time you'll see that. That you weren't in control of what happened. That you didn't make James have an affair or make Nick do what he did, Beth said, her eyes filling with tears. I shook my head gingerly. No, you don't understand. I deserve this, to live with what I've caused. I rolled over, my back to her, and cried silently until I fell asleep. And now, 30 days later, I'm still working to believe what Beth said. Intellectually, I understand I didn't kill anyone. But my actions started a ripple effect that ended with 3 people dead. My therapist tells me if I stop blaming myself, if I stop being mad at myself, that I will have to deal with the real pain, the real loss. And that's what I'm hiding from. But my therapist also says that I will come to terms with what's happened, with her help, but also at my own pace. And that's okay. She helped me talk to the police about what happened. She sat with me while I recounted the story for what I hoped would be the last time for a while. And she listened to me sob hysterically after they ended their investigation and told me that after talking with Brianna and some of Nick's co-workers and looking at flight records and talking with people in Maui, that Nick had, in fact, been there during the exact dates Dylan and James were. And although they couldn't prove he'd pricked that brake line of the Jeep, they believed he had. I took a leave of absence from work, and I'm in the process of putting my house on the market. My therapist also warned me not to undergo too much change at once, but I found that it's helped me take my mind off things. At least a little bit. And she does agree a fresh start will be good for me. I'm searching James's desk for some paperwork the real estate agent needs when I see it. The heart-shaped tin. It holds our letters. The ones James and I wrote to each other in the beginning of our relationship. The ones I couldn't find. I thought it was gone. I slowly remove the lid. I exhale when I see James's messy handwriting jumping off the pages. I wonder why he had these, I say to myself as I read the one on the top of the stack. The first note he ever sent me, when his love for me radiated off the page in deep waves, making me laugh and cry at the same time. Jax. I should start this letter by telling you that you're like a fine wine, you know, because of how we met. But you just call my bullshit. I know it. So I'll tell you something else. Something I haven't been able to stop thinking about since that day. You're unlike anyone I've ever met, and you are going to change me in amazing ways. I can't wait to see what happens next with you. And yes, I am writing us, even after such a short time together. Because there's no going back to my lonely Lucky Charms life now. The only life I want is the one with you in it. I feel a warmth run through my body, realizing he had read this one recently, too. Had he sought these letters out to dispose of them as he began his new life with Dylan? Or had he been rethinking his choices? Rethinking us? His life with me in it? I'll never know for sure. But I'm choosing to believe he knew we had simply lost our way. That our love wasn't the kind to disappear. Like the sun behind a cloud, it would still peek out from time to time. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Good Widow by Liz Fenton and Lisa Steinke, performed by Dara Rosenberg. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Audio, all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.